You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Thielen in motion. McCarthy keeps. He's got it. And forces his way into the end zone. Touchdown.
Good for J.J. McCarthy, because before the fourth quarter last night, his debut was horrible. Good morning, everybody. Joe Beninati is going to join us on the show. No, not to talk Caps. Joe B's called the first two Terps football games of the year, and we'll get his thoughts on freshman phenom Malik Washington at noon. Doc will join me on the show at 12:30. This from Tree. Tree writes, "We need coaching blunders back, Kevin. Please rip Ben Johnson." Yeah, guess what, Tree? We're going to bring it back. Coaching blunders today in the 11 a.m. hour. There were a couple from the weekend that I jotted down, so we'll do that. But I want you guys also, because I don't watch every single game, and there are plenty of them that I miss, so we may turn that into a call segment. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, Ben Johnson had zero clue as to what was going on at the end of that football game. A little bit alarming. I know it's his first game as a head coach. Give him some leeway, just like I would have done had the game continued for J.J. McCarthy the way it started. I mean, it's his first game. We have to relax on these proclamations. My guy, Kevin Arlington, and I love you, Kev. I do. Kevin was a big, big J.J. McCarthy guy before the 24 draft. And he just said, "That's J.J. Mack, fighter, leader, QB I envisioned killing it one day with KOC, Kevin O'Connell, mentoring him. I felt he was the second best quarterback in his class after Jaden, just slightly ahead of Penix." See what I mean? Yes, he was incredibly resilient, tough, battler, all of that. The first three quarters were alarmingly awful, but it was his first game. This is a marathon, man, when it comes to quarterbacks in particular. God, you know who played great on Sunday? Daniel Jones. Caleb Williams, though, we've now seen a bunch of games, and I do have some thoughts on him. But J.J. McCarthy last night, that was big time. To do what he did in the fourth quarter, when honestly it looked like he wanted to bury his head in the sand because of the embarrassment of the first three quarters, but he didn't. And that's not what he is. I mean, I think everybody knew about J.J. McCarthy coming out of Michigan. Winner, competitor, resilient, all of those things. He was not my favorite quarterback. I did not see it with J.J. McCarthy coming out. I love Jaden, as you guys know, and I really liked Penix Jr. As kind of after Jaden. Now, I liked Caleb's talent, too. There's a lot that's starting to come out about Caleb Williams. This guy, Tyler Dunn from where is he from? 33rd team or Go Long? I think it's Go Long. Did this big piece where he talked to a lot of people in the Chicago organization from last year. There are some issues apparently building with Caleb Williams in Chicago. And I did not think, even after the start, that he looked great. But we'll get to that here in a moment. The game was exciting, though. We've had four primetime games going back to Thursday. All four games have been excellent. Cowboys-Philly was good. Chiefs-Chargers on Friday night, really good. Baltimore and Buffalo, epic all-time opening week one game. Seriously, it's in the conversation. By the way, I did a deep dive on something yesterday. I had this weird feeling that 41-40 is a final score, Max, was like unusual, unique. Well, Pro Football Reference, for all of you football nerds, they've got so many of these search and these tools you can use to kind of just basically investigate or deep dive on anything. And so they've had this score finder for years. I've talked about it before, but you can put in 24-17 as a final score and hit search in every game in NFL history that's ever ended, 24-17 will pop up. Well, I did that yesterday after the show. I put in 41-40, and there was one game that popped up. Buffalo-Baltimore, Sunday night. Fun fact to know and tell, the only NFL game ever to end 41-40.
You know what that's called, right, Kev?
What?
It's called a scoreigami. It's kind of a thing on NFL Twitter now. Now, the guy who posts the scoreigamis, he didn't post it the night of the game, and people had thought that the guy died. So scoreigami is a bit like when there's the first time of that score ever in NFL history. It's a big thing on Twitter now. So
oh,
it's kinda,
really? I'm unfamiliar with scoreigami.
Yeah, no.
Very unfamiliar with score.
People
I'm
love
familiar
agami.
With NFL nerd. Like, he does some of the stuff that some of us are interested in, but I'm not familiar with scoreigami.
Yeah, that's that.
So did he post that this was 41-40 first time ever?
Yeah, well, people kind of knew.
Finally?
People knew as it was the game was closing out. But I don't know if he even, hold on, let me pull up his Twitter, because I know he posted the final score from Monday Night Football.
Here it is, scoreigami, at @NFL_scoreigami.
Yes, he didn't put it out. He's edging the people with this tweet. That's kind of crazy. But yeah, no, first scoreigami
well,
of the year.
I wonder if I'm wrong.
No,
hold
you're
on.
Not.
I'm going to go back and do it again.
You're not wrong. This is a scoreigami. It has to be. 41-40 has never happened.
Yeah, I mean, I just went to Pro Football Reference and used the thing that I've used before, where you can search for any game score and put in the score, 41-40. Let's just see. I want to do it again. Find games. And yeah, Buffalo-Baltimore is the only one in NFL history.
That's a gami.
Yeah, but he doesn't have it.
I don't know why he didn't tweet it.
So am I the first to break the news on this?
The first official with the most official power. That yes, you are.
I don't have any official power.
You have a platform.
Yeah, but not scoreigamis. He's got 500,000 followers on X.
That's true.
I'm following him right now.
Good.
Just gave me somebody new to follow. I wonder if NFL Nerd had it, because I do follow him, but I didn't see that he posted that. He's much more of a schedule nerd.
Yeah. I mean, people were going crazy at the end of the game. Like, that's a scoreigami. People were shocked he didn't tweet.
Okay.
People wanted to do a wellness
check. They must have thought that it wasn't a scoreigami.
I suppose. But they were wrong.
Well, it was.
It was.
It was. But anyway, back to the point. Four primetime games, four really solid games. The next primetime game comes Thursday night, Lambeau Field, Washington, and Green Bay. The last time Washington and Green Bay played in prime time, it was the first Monday night game after 9/11. And it was ugly, 30-0. I'm pretty sure that's the final score. Now I got to go back and check that, make sure I got that right. But 2001, week two, because remember, there was a week off after 9/11. I'm sorry, 37-0. That was Marty's second game. They had lost the opener that year. I mean, it was such an ugly start. 2001 starts with Washington losing at San Diego 30-3. 9/11 happens. They take the week off. They come back. They play the Packers in week two on Monday Night Football. 37-0 was the final. Then they lost to the Chiefs 45-13 at home. Then they lost to the Giants 23-9, and then they blew it against the Cowboys on Monday Night Football. Had the game locked up, basically, but ended up losing that before they turned their entire season around thanks to LeVar Arrington's pick six against the Panthers. They went on a five-game win streak. I know I've referenced the 2001 season many times. Honestly, it was one of my favorite seasons in the moment because it had been a while, right? I mean, we had had the nastiness of 2000-99 playoff season, but man, Marty seemed to have turned that whole thing around, and we know the rest of the story. Dan wasn't having much fun. Fred Drasner didn't like Marty taking away his parking spot. Vinny was out of the organization and wanted back in, and so they told Marty to pack his bags. That's the next primetime game. So let's hope for another one that comes down to the wire, because if it does, I trust our guy over their guy. By the way, the Packers now up to a 4-point favorite in a lot of spots. There is a lot of Packers love right now out there. I was listening this morning to the Get Up show with Greenberg and all those guys, and multiple people think Green Bay now is the favorite to win the NFC Championship. I wanted to say, did you guys forget about Philadelphia, the team that just won the Super Bowl and also won their opener? They're favored at Arrowhead Sunday in the late game on Fox. It's the only 4:25 game of week two, Philly at Kansas City Super Bowl rematch, and the Eagles are favored on the road in that game. Already people after 1 week discounting Kansas City as they don't look legit. Settle down 1 week. So last night's game, you know, I got to tell you, man, Caleb Williams, this is now, you know, year two. There's something about him and the way he plays, and you're going to have to give it time, obviously. I mean, it's a marathon with quarterbacks, not a sprint, and this is his first game, regular season game, with Ben Johnson as the offensive coordinator. But God, he looks very spastic, very hyper. There's not a lot of the calm that you would see from Oklahoma days or USC days. You know, there's probably not a comfort with the offense yet, clearly. It's game one. You know, even in the first quarter when he started off basically, I think, 8 for 8, something like that, and he had a couple of big runs, including, you know, a touchdown run, it was not a work of art in the pocket. He's athletic, and he was able to extricate himself from a couple of things. But God, when he misses throws, he misses badly, badly. I'm not, you know, the book has not been written on Caleb Williams. You got to get through, at least with a new coach and a new coordinator, you got to get through at least an entire season. And then the coordinator slash head coach will tell you whether or not he thinks there's a chance that this will develop into something special based on his actions. You know, if Caleb Williams plays all 17 games and you see progress, hooray. If he gets benched at some point for Tyson Badgett, the kid from Shepherd College, trouble. The Bears have some talent, too. That's, you know, the part of this that's, you know, it's going to come down to how quickly Ben Johnson can coach up Caleb Williams. J.J. McCarthy looked terrible for the first three quarters. First game, nerves, I'm sure, a big part of it. Clearly didn't see some things, took some sacks. I don't think the protection was that great. I think the game changed for them when Jordan Mason became the primary runner. Charch told us about Jordan Mason on Thursday's show. He was high on Jordan Mason being the guy in Minnesota before not too long. Well, not too long was last night. He had 15 carries for 68 yards. Aaron Jones had 8 carries for 23 yards. Jordan Mason actually looked really impressive. You know, perfect back for this scheme, comes out of the Kyle Shanahan San Francisco scheme into the Kevin O'Connell's, you know, Shanahan, you know, although Jay's tree, the Gruden tree, produced Kevin O'Connell as well. But once Jordan Mason got in the game and they started to run the football, running the football is pretty important for a young, inexperienced quarterback, no doubt. And that first touchdown pass to Justin Jefferson was huge because it looked like it was in traffic and it looked a little bit, you know, discombobulated. Like, it was a good throw, but there were two receivers in the same area. I thought his best throw of the night was the two-point conversion throw to Adam Thielen. You want to see incredible arm strength. That is a big-time NFL arm strength throw, the two-point conversion on the out to Thielen that made it 20-17. But they scored 21 unanswered to go from down 17-6 to up 27-17. And then came the debacle of the Bears trying to manage the very end of it. It was not pleasant to watch. And if you're a Ben Johnson believer, you know, a guy that certainly would have been a candidate had he been interested in being a head coach, I still think they would have hired Dan Quinn after interviewing him. But the touchdown drive down 27-17, when you're down 10 and you only have one timeout left, and that's what they were, that's what they had. They had one timeout left. You have to score well before the 2-minute warning. If you don't, it's pretty much game over unless you recover an onside kick. And so once they got into field goal range, and they got into field goal range quickly because Cole Kmet made an incredible catch down the seam that put him at the Chicago 35 with about 2:40 to go. Now, clock's running, and they maybe that was too long of a field goal, and that they had already missed a field goal in the game, Chicago had. But you've got to get a quick out and out of bounds and kick that field goal with about 2:20, 2:15, worst case. What you have to do is you've got to have the two-minute warning as your second timeout. Without it, you're basically dead. Because then you're into that, we're going to have to kick an onside kick, and if we don't get the onside kick, it's over, because with one timeout, they can still burn 40 plus 40, that's 80 seconds, that's a minute 20. After they punt it, it's going to be like 15 seconds left, and we're going to need a touchdown at that point. If you've kicked the field goal, if you've gone and gotten the touchdown, it's still going to be hard after the punt to get in field goal range. Ben Johnson looked absolutely oblivious to this fact in the play calling. The play calling was working the clock all the way down. They had a chance with 2 minutes and 12 seconds to go after a penalty and an injury to kick a very short field goal. That would have been the move to make it 27-20. Then you can line up, kick off, and even if they run it out, which we'll get to in a moment, then you have a chance get the two-minute warning as a second timeout. Then you've got a third timeout. You would have taken it before the two-minute warning. Actually, dicey, you don't want to give them a chance to throw the football if you're going to snap with 2:04 to go. But now you're talking about a minute 10 when they end up punting it, and you've got time. That's pretty much the opportunity you have. Everybody that watches football, any kid that plays Madden knows that. Ben Johnson did not know that. It was very obvious that he thought they needed a touchdown, and he was oblivious to the fact that one timeout and not getting the 2 minute as a timeout was death. Now, they scored a touchdown with 2 minutes and 2 seconds left. So now you got to do one of two things. You got to kick it out of the end zone to force them to take a snap before the 2 minute warning, or you have to kick it out of bounds. Kicking it out of bounds, they would get the ball at the 40. All right, they'd get the ball at the 40-yard line instead of the 35 if you kick it through the end zone. If your kicker can't sail it through the back of the end zone, kick it out of bounds. Give them 5 yards, but they have to take a snap before the two-minute warning. Of course, Kevin O'Connell knew what was going on. And in one of the most incredible, you know, instant replay, isolated coach, kicker things that you've ever seen, back to return the kickoff was Tyson Chandler. Ty Chandler was back to return the kickoff. Minnesota had to return that kickoff because it would burn off the 2 seconds and they'd be able to snap the ball under 2 minutes. And that would essentially mean game. Well, he was looking after he caught it about 5-6 yards deep in the end zone at Kevin O'Connell. And Kevin O'Connell, who understands this stuff, said, come on out. And he started waving him out. He brought it out, minute 55 left. Basically, at that point, game over. When they punted, there were 16 seconds left. And, you know, they had 9 seconds after the fair catch, and they had to get in field goal range, and it just wasn't going to happen from their own 20-yard line. Not, you know, again, first game as a head coach for Ben Johnson. I would assume he understands this stuff. But a lot of guys that have been coordinators and they become a head coach for the first time maybe don't. It looked like he had no clue as to what was going on and how badly he hurt his team's chances of keeping that game alive by not kicking the field goal with about 212, 215, 223 or whatever it was. Left in the game. And all due respect to Caleb Williams, I don't think Caleb Williams, based on that Thanksgiving Day game last year where Eberflus and Caleb Williams were basically frickin' frack in terms of the management of the clock, I don't think it was Caleb who would get it and understand it. But that's not his job. That's the head coach's job. Good football game, though. And a performance where J.J. McCarthy, for three quarters in his first game, looked shell-shocked by the NFL, and then in the fourth quarter came up huge. He is a tough, and always has been, a tough kid. The other thing I was going to mention is, I never thought at Michigan J.J. McCarthy looked to be 6'3". He is 6'3". I always thought he looked like a smaller quarterback. I thought he looked like a big dude last night. Minnesota's got an interesting team. They went 14-3 last year, and they said, no, we're not really into Sam Darnold, who led us or helped lead us to a 14-3. We got this kid, and we believe in him. That's a big statement, you know, after 14-3 with Sam Darnold sort of resuscitating his career to come back and do to let him go and come back with McCarthy. They did pick him, you know, number 10 overall. But Darnold's end to the season cost him so much money and so much of an opportunity. By the way, we're going to go around the NFL at 11 a.m., but Seattle with Darnold lost to the 49ers in the opener at home 17-13. In that game, the 49ers lost George Kittle. They probably have lost Brock Purdy for at least a game. Christian McCaffrey's banged up. Trent Williams is banged up and struggled. The 49ers have been bitten by the injury bug more than any other team in recent years, and they can't win without their star players. With their star players, they're a threat in the NFC. Long way to go. 1 week in the books. We'll go around the NFL at 11 a.m. because we did not have a chance to do that yesterday. The only game we did touch was the Baltimore-Buffalo game. All right. Up next, sort of upon further review, I went back, and you know me, I'm not doing a film breakdown. I'm not an internet film breakdown person. But I did go back and watch a lot of the All-22 from the game on Sunday. And I thought that there were some interesting things that I noticed that I want to share with all of you. And I will do that when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are free and live on the Odyssey app. All of our NFL talk, by the way, all season long here on the Team 980, is presented by Paramount Plus. Sylvester Stallone is back in the original hit series Tulsa King. This season, Dwight faces his most dangerous adversaries yet, forcing him to fight for everything he's built and to protect his empire. Stream the new season of Tulsa King on Sunday, September 21st, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And then with Deebo on the kick returns, I know that's part of who he is and what he's done for a long time. As a coach, when you're, you know, seeing him try to hurdle guys on kick returns and knowing how valuable he is on offense, is there ever any like, oh gosh, please don't, please don't?
I try not. I wouldn't put him in if I felt like that would be the case, because I do know it's some game-breaking plays. But if we can be the best at that, then I think that's, you know, a really big opt to do it. It's definitely different than it was, you know, just 2 years ago. They're closer. It's different. It's a more effective way, I think, with the kick and the kick returns. We're still learning it and growing, but I do feel like he's the type of person that can be a game breaker at it.
I think that what he said there about Deebo back on kick returns, where he talks about it, it's a different play over the last 2 years. The kickoff rule changed, made the kickoff return much more resemble a line of scrimmage play than a true return, where guys coming down have a 60, 55-yard running head start, and the collisions are much bigger. They're still that way on punts, but they're just not going to be as frequent on kickoff returns. Teams are putting two returners back there. I think we saw a significant increase over the weekend in kickoff returns because of the 5-yard extra punishment of a touchback now coming out to the 35-yard line. It makes a huge difference in the way teams are going to approach the kickoff. 35-yard line, man, is a 12% increase in score probability from the 30-yard line for a drive starting position. So that is meaningful, and so you're going to see teams trying to get that ball into the landing area between the 20 and the goal line. What was interesting in watching a lot of the games from over the weekend and even Sunday night and last night, it's not easy to do. I would think it would be easy to do, but I've seen a lot of kicks, especially the ones where kickers are trying to get some height. I've seen a lot of those kicks sail into the end zone. And I mentioned this in my recap yesterday, but Deebo should not have taken that kick out of the end zone to start the game. That was 1 yard deep in the end zone. Any kick that travels over the goal line in the air should be a touchback, unless you're in the situation Minnesota was in last night, where you're trying to get the clock under 2 minutes. And Deebo took that out. Look, it's the opening kickoff of the season. He's excited. I don't have a problem with Deebo back on kickoff returns. I think that's, if this were 2023 instead of the rules of the last 2 years, I don't think he would be back there. And I think that's what Dan Quinn was saying. So, on Tuesdays during football season, I like to do something sort of in what I would call an upon further review setting, where I go back and look at the game again. I'm not spending hours on this, and I'm not a film breakdown guy. I leave that to, well, the people that really know how to do it, guys like Cooley and a couple of others. But because everybody does it on the internet now. It's hysterical. You talk about a cottage industry, film breakdowns, which Cooley was the pioneer of for the most part. Now, anybody with the All-22, and I have access to the All-22, got to pay for it. You can pay for it, too, can do it. But I do like to go back and look, especially in this first game, because we spent so much time in the offseason, right, contemplating, you know, how the personnel would be used, especially the new personnel. And I found some things that I think are interesting. You know, overall, by the way, my game take highlights or big takeaways didn't change. The defense dominated the game. I mean, completely dominated the game at the line of scrimmage. But they also dominated the game pretty much on the back end as well. It was one of the better tackling performances, maybe of any of the games we've seen Quinn Witt Jr. a part of here in D.C. There's also no question that the Giants are limited with Russell Wilson at quarterback. Let's not forget that. I don't know if they'll be any better when Jackson Dart gets his chance, but I would imagine, I think Russ is going to start Sunday against the Cowboys. I think Brian Daboll announced that yesterday. But Russell Wilson was really a shell of his former self. And look, some of that was, I think, part of what Washington was doing defensively to confuse him. You know, there was a lot of, are they in man? Are they in zone? Looks like the play starts man. Oh my God, no, they're actually in zone. But the big takeaways of defense dominated and simultaneously, the game was a sloppy game with a lot to clean up in a short period of time. Those are still the two big takeaways from Sunday's 21-6 win over the Giants. The sloppiness being too many penalties, too many drop passes. The timeout usage was not good. Leaving points on, going into the halftime locker room on the board was not what you want to do. And you really can't do that against a better opponent. It's week one. We'll see whether or not some of the things that were good are trends versus aberrations. And we'll see whether or not they can correct and improve some of the sloppiness that was a part of the game. Now, here are some things that I jotted down. There are like six or seven things that I jotted down after watching the All-22 well into the third quarter, to be honest with you. I didn't do the entire game. So one of the things that we spent a lot of time talking about in the offseason was, you know, Kinlaw, Wise, Goldman. By the way, Goldman was, I think for some, a surprise that he made the team. There was a lot of discussion that Goldman would be waived before the season began. No. In fact, he is a significant part of their run-stopping, you know, presentation in terms of what they did in the opener. Because there are a couple of things that struck me. Number one is that they truly believe they've got a lot of versatility with their defensive line. And not just versatility in terms of the types of players they have. Within a player, they think there's a lot of versatility. Kinlaw played all over the place. Kinlaw played D-end. He played D-tackle. I think he was, you know, basically a nose on a play. Payne lined up outside versus inside on a play or two. Dorrance Armstrong, all right, he is a defensive end on rundowns when he's in there. He is inside on third and long passing downs. And then he drops into coverage like a linebacker. By the way, I like Dorrance Armstrong a lot. We talked about him during the offseason. He really finished up the season strong. I think they trust him because he's smart and he's got incredible versatility. He plays D-tackle on pass downs inside with Payne, and he can play D-end on run downs and, again, in coverage. How about Jacob Martin? I think before Sunday, most people who don't pay attention to the summer, and sort of join in, you know, when the real games begin, Jacob Martin, number 55, is probably a guy a lot of people didn't even know. He was, A, in the starting lineup, first defensive snaps of the season. They kind of went with a five-man front on early downs with Goldman and Payne inside, Wise and Kinlaw at defensive end, and Martin as kind of a fifth defensive lineman. It wasn't always with Goldman as the nose, but Goldman plays some D-tackle and plays nose tackle. Remember last year, sometimes we would say, is that a five-man defensive front or is that a 3-4? It really, it depends. Like, it's a five-man defensive front, I think, if they're all in a three-point stance, and the two edges are more defensive ends, and I think it's more of a three, as long as, you know, and then the 3-4, there's a bona fide, somebody playing zero technique nose tackle, and then on the outside, you have guys that are up in a two-point stance, and they're more like linebackers. I think it's really semantics. It'd be interesting to have a conversation with Quinn or Joe Witt Jr. about how they sort of call five-man front versus is it a 3-4 or is it a five-man front, but they do a lot of things, and the emphasis to stop the run starts with Goldman, Payne, Kinlaw, and Wise. That's now they went with a lot of different lineups, but if you were looking to see what they did to start the season, I think it's telling. Who were the players they put out in those situations to start the season? It's probably what they envision right now as the best. Goldman's a big part of what they want to do against the run. Payne and Kinlaw, obviously, as well. Wise as well. Now, on passing downs, what they want to do is third and long, and I mentioned this, I'm pretty sure I did on the show yesterday. They have four guys that they put out there on third and eight or longer. The Giants had multiple third and tens and longer. And those four are Payne and Armstrong inside, Luvu and Von Miller outside. And by the way, on the third and longs, they just rushed four. I mentioned on the show that they did not blitz a lot. And where did I see this number? Maybe Ben put it out on his Substack column. I think he may have. The blitz percentage. Commanders blitzed on only 24.4% of the dropback snaps. It didn't seem like they blitzed a lot. In watching the game first blush, there are the numbers. Washington's pressure rate, fourth highest in the league entering last night's game at 48.9%. Look, I think Wilson puts some of that on himself a lot of the time, but Sunday, it was quick. It happened quickly. But D-line, to me, was an interesting thing to look at. And Goldman as a nose D tackle in that run game with Kinlaw and Payne and Wise, you know, and then with, you know, when they've got the two backers in the game, in Luvu and Wagner, Goldman played 38% of the snaps as either a defensive tackle or a nose tackle. But that's, they saw in the offseason that run stopping was an issue. And the way to address it was with size and, by the way, with some athleticism, because Kinlaw's athletic. Payne is athletic. And Goldman's just one big man. Wise is a tall, long dude. I think it's pretty clear who they think their best run stoppers are, and it's pretty clear who they think their best pass rushers are. And now we'll see, ultimately, as we go through the season, game by game, if it holds up against much better offenses, better quarterbacks, you know, et cetera. Because the Giants, I don't think we're going to look back and say, that was actually a legitimate test. Because I don't think it's going to be with Russell Wilson at quarterback. D-line... Oh, I also mentioned yesterday that, or maybe it was the right after the game when I did my post-game podcast, that Johnny Newton wasn't out there enough for me. He ended up being out there more than I thought. He didn't get a full load, that's for sure, but he got more than I thought. And I thought he got some pressure on a couple of occasions. That's what was mentioned to, I think, a lot of us, you know, early in the offseason, early in camp, is that they expected Johnny Newton to be a contributor and an impact player, especially as a pass rusher. So we'll see. They did have on one of the pass rush situations, instead of Armstrong and Payne, they had Armstrong and Kinlaw. And then Newton was in there on some second and longs. The next thing I wanted to mention is, man, there is no doubt in Bobby Wagner they trust. You know, we've heard so much about Jordan McGee and how much they like him and how much, you know, the injuries have kind of held him back. Well, he's healthy. He was up. He played two snaps on defense. Two. He played special teams, but just two snaps on defense. They just don't trust Wagner not being on the field. He is the extension of Joe Witt Jr., and he was on the field for all 68 of New York's offensive snaps. Frankie Louvu and Quan Martin also on the field for all 68 of New York's snaps. So Jordan McGee, he may be talented, and maybe we'll see more and more of him as the season goes to try to spell Wagner. I would imagine in games that maybe are a little bit out of hand, and this one wasn't because it was 14-6 in the fourth quarter, even though it didn't feel like it was a competitive game. We'll get Jordan McGee in late, but man, they absolutely feel like they have to have Bobby Wagner on the field. I went back and checked something. The Deebo Samuel touchdown, I mentioned yesterday that it could have been called delay a game. I was wrong. The clock hit zero, but it wasn't that full beat that they usually let the teams have before they flag them for delay a game. So it wasn't necessarily simultaneous with the snap, but it wasn't a full beat or second after it hit zero. The blocking on that play that Deebo had was, first of all, Tunsil's leading the way. Whew. When he's out on as a run blocker, I don't think anybody really wants to get in his way. Bates was out there, and Bill Kroski Merritt was out there, and McCaffrey threw a really good block at the line of scrimmage. I went through all three of Jaden's sacks. You know, I want to see what's going on the sacks, because there was one sack that I thought was clearly on him, and I think he's going to have to become a little bit less nonchalant on some of these. But the first sack, second quarter, it was part of the drive that ended in the Kroski Merritt touchdown run. It was first and 10. The Giants literally jumped the bubble screen, and he wisely did not throw the football. And it looked like Washington should have had the advantage. They had 3-2, and somehow the Giant defenders were able to read it quickly and jumped it, and they weren't able to keep the path clear for Deebo on the tunnel or bubble screen. And Jaden smartly did not throw it, and he took a sack. I would chalk that one up to good instinctive defense. Sack number two, same drive. It was a first and 15 after a Noah Brown offsides. And Brian Burns just beats Connerly Jr. and beats him badly and quickly, where Jaden literally had no choice. You know, of course, by the way, that resulted in a 9-yard loss and a second and 19. And per usual, bad down and distance. No worries. No problem. They overcame it. You know, they overcame a second and 16, a second and 21, a second and 14, and a second and 15 in that game. It has been one of those things that we can count on. It's like, how devastating, you know, penalties and sacks. Sacks more so because the down counts. Penalties, the down typically doesn't count. But sacks are absolutely devastating to drives. Penalties tend to be devastating to drives. Not for this team. By the way, the first two sacks were both by Brian Burns. He's a good player. He's been a good player. Sack number three, which is the one that made me want to go back and look at all three, is the one where I think 100% was on Jaden. He held it. He took a huge loss. It was an 11-yard loss, minus 11. And he could have thrown it, could have unloaded it a couple of times. I think he could have thrown it to Ertz. There was a bit of some double coverage on Ertz, but I thought there was a hole. And Eckler was available on the checkdown. And he just held it too long. And Thibodeau and Carter, who, by the way, was really good in this game, on special teams too, they got him. You know, he immediately, by the way, after taking that sack, he immediately gets up, looks over to the sideline, pounds his chest and says, my fault, my bad. Jaden definitely has that level of confidence that he can get himself out of anything, and he has for the most part, but I think sometimes it creates this feeling of, I'm okay, you know, I don't want to say casual or nonchalant. I thought he was a little bit on that one, but anyway, you know, didn't hurt him in that game, and that was one I don't think they overcame, the 11-yard loss. No, it was. It was the second and 21. They overcame it. Of course they did. The next thing on my list, I don't know if we played this yesterday, but Jaden, I guess, apparently after the game said that Terry was doubled all day long, and that was a reason he wasn't targeted a bunch. It's not true. Terry had two catches for 27 yards on four targets. By the way, the other two targets were the deep ball, where Jaden misses him. Terry makes a really good move, and that's a 69-yard touchdown, unless he gets, you know, shoestring tackled from behind, which seemed to happen a lot last year. But it's a massive play if Jaden lays it out there. And maybe it's the timing between the two of them is just a bit off. That's fine. But that was one of the targets that, let me just say, that should have been a big play. And then the other one was the play that I thought he caught the ball. Quinn challenged it. I thought it was a catch. I thought it was the right thing to challenge it, but it wasn't overturned. It was called incomplete, and it was upheld. I thought that was a bad upheld situation. I thought it should have been overturned. So, you know, the four targets very easily could have ended up in another, you know, 90 yards, 80 yards of pass reception yards, and no one would have complained if it was four catches for 106, you know, but it wasn't. It was 2 for 27. And the bottom line is he was definitely not doubled all day long. A little bit here and there, but not all day. By the way, Terry had the third most targets behind Debo and Ertz and played more snaps than any receiver out there. So he was ready to go, ready for a full load, 79% of the snaps. And personally, I thought he was pretty good in the game. You know, again, the numbers would have been much better. And Terry blocks. You know, Terry's a part of everything. So, but I know that, you know, there will be a narrative that somehow Terry was doubled. You know, the entire defense was focused on Terry McLaurin, and that's, it wasn't. It was, there were some plays, no doubt, some brackets, some over that top help with a safety, but not all day. One of the things that you even notice, especially when you get the overhead on the all 22, and I just made a note of this, man, the defense just swarmed all day long. And that, I think, is what, you know, Quinn and Witt Jr. and the defensive staff, it's like, look, if we're going down, we're going down playing at 110. You know, we're flying around, we're competing, we're urgent, we're physical, we're fast, and they played fast. They played urgently, and you can just see bees on honey on some of those plays. You know, it was the penalties and the lack of takeaways that were the negatives, but everything else was a positive. And, you know, one of the guys that flew around almost at another level was Will Harris. He was really good in this game. The tackling in this game, I thought, was just so good. Because last year, that was a big issue. It wasn't just that they were getting gashed, especially on the edges. They were missing tackles, not in the opener. They didn't miss any tackles in the opener. By the way, I think I mentioned this yesterday, but Matt Gay, two kickoffs into the end zone. Don't kick it into the end zone. I mean, please. We cannot hand the ball to the team at the 35-yard line. At the same time, it's apparently not so easy to land it between the 20 and the goal line. Oh, there was one other thing, and this wasn't even an all-22 note. But I loved how Jaden went right back to Jalen Lane after his drop. And Jalen Lane made a nice catch, a nice turn up the field. You know, it was about a 6-yard depth, and he turned it into an 11-yard gain. I don't know if Jaden did that purposefully, but if he did, that is emotional IQ, people. You know, you hear it all the time. Good quarterbacks come right back to a guy that, you know, has a drop, makes a mistake. This is a rookie. He had dropped a ball. Next play, there he is with a catch and an 11-yard play. Jaden is definitely savvy. I mean, we know and we've heard, you know, how smart he is, how, you know, intelligent he is, but there's a smart savviness to him as well. Those were the things that I pulled. I think just to me, stopping the run is going to be so massive. Creating more possessions, creating better field position. The penalties hurt on the yardage on field position, even though they didn't let the Giants score. But, you know, better starting field position, and really they had it a couple of times because of bad punts by the Giant punter, who was not very good on Sunday. The other note I had is Abdul Carter in his first game looks like he's going to be a problem for the league. And he should have blocked two punts. Should have blocked two in the game. Shore up whatever they got going on with the punt protection for Thursday night, or we're going to see one blocked and it's going to be a big play in the game. All right. I think that's all I have. Some of what Dan Quinn said in his Monday press conference we'll get to next. 11 a.m. we'll go around the league. We didn't have a chance to do that and talk about the other 13 games that were played Sunday. We've already talked about last night's game. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
All right. Here is what's happening. It is Tuesday, September 9th. And here's what's trending around the area of DC sports. The Vikings, not DC sports, but they did complete the comeback on Monday Night Football to beat Caleb Williams and the Chicago Bears 27-24 from the Windy City. The Jacksonville Jaguars are trading Tank Bigsby to the Philadelphia Eagles in exchange for 5th and 6th round picks in 2026 draft. This is the 5th trade the Eagles have made since mid-August. And the Nats, they beat the Marlins by a score of 15-7 last night. Cade Cavalli with a solid performance. He had 5 innings pitched, 6 hits, and giving up only 2 earned runs. He notches another win, improving his record to 3-1 on the season. Josh Bell's hot streak continues after he hit his 3rd home run in his last 2 games. Again, the Nats beat the Marlins 15-7 tonight. They will continue their series versus Miami. Mitch Parker takes the bump versus Adam Mazur. First pitch at 6:40, and Nats on deck with Charlie and Dave at 6:10 on the Fan. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live every day from 10 to 1, and you can catch Denton's Office throughout all football season. Don't forget to hit the like button whenever you do decide to join us and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that is what's trending.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab 3 of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly outside of Cleveland, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
One other thing that I had in my notes after watching the All-22 that I forgot to mention. So Jaden on the opening drive of the game keeps the ball on. It was an 8-yard run. It was a 5-yard run, excuse me, on a read option, a true zone read where he's reading the outside edge, who is Brian Burns. He makes the wrong decision. I'm pretty sure he does. The edge plays Jaden. Jaden's just so good, he's able to outrun him to the sideline and get 5 yards. But I think that is one of those. I'd be surprised if they don't say, you know, you... Burns plays it where, you know, he certainly eyeballs Eckler, but he's playing Jaden. And if he keeps it in Eckler's, you know, gut, I don't know how big of a run it is, but I just think that was something I mentioned a lot last year. I thought that in the zone reads that there were games in which maybe he made the wrong decisions. And remember, I had the guy that coached him up at the quarterback academy, Taylor Kelly, who came on with me a couple of times during the season last year. And he admitted that. He said they've pointed that out. There have been a couple of misreads on zone read plays from Jaden, reading that D end. You know, not all of them are supposed to be true option plays. They'll just look like them. This one is, there's no doubt. And the reason you know that is they leave Burns unblocked. So they leave him unblocked for Jaden to read. I don't think he read it properly. That would be my guess. What do I know? But his speed allows him to beat Burns to the outside anyway. But remember, that's one of those where he took a big hit, kind of got crunched on the sideline after a 5-yard run. I'm pretty sure he should have read that the DN's playing him and left it in Eckler's gut. That's my guess. Just something to keep an eye on, because I think he, last year, he gets away with him because he's such an athlete, but it's not the right reads. And it also costs you sometimes big plays because they're playing the quarterback. You take another defender out of the run stopping for the back. This was Dan Quinn yesterday on the back end, the secondary, playing I think whomever asked the question mentioned the word stingy. It was a word he liked. Here's Quinn on his secondary play on Sunday.
Looking at the back end of the defense, your quarterback room and your safeties, they look like they were stingy. They weren't giving up anything. What did you see from those guys?
I like it. Stingy. That is exactly how I felt. I knew we would be challenged. The quarterback, Russ, is just fantastic at throwing deep balls. So we knew that's part of, you know, going against them, that, and especially with, you know, Neighbors and Robinson, who've got real speed to get outside, Slayton as well. So that was going to be the challenge. And so I was pleased to see him battle and go for it. I know we had one foul. I believe with Trey on one, like those ones will coach our way through, Donna, as we're going to learn. But I was pleased to see them. I thought there was a really good tackle also by Will that, you know, like really square and made a third and one or a third down and two, and the team ended up winning the next play. So that tackle that was, you know, like just there wasn't any yards after the contact. I thought just a really good tackling demonstration. So, you know, in our first time all together, I thought the tackling was on point. I thought the DBs and the corners specifically really took to the challenge of what was going to happen on the outside.
Yeah, the tackling was excellent. It was a massive improvement on the back end from last year. And I think the hit that he's talking about is the hit on Wilson down by the goal line. It was the third and goal play where Wilson scrambled and Harris absolutely laid him out, and the ball was on the ground. And Russell Wilson was able to retrieve it and pull it back in. But Will Harris was, I thought, really exceptional. You know, that was another thing, right? Chin or Harris? Harris was cheaper than Chin. They have a bigger hitter. You know, I'll look to see what the breakdown was, but Quan was clearly the free safety in this game and playing the deep part of the field with Will Harris much more much closer to the line of scrimmage. And I thought he was exceptional. I'm looking to see how many tackles in the game he had, because I think Wagner led the team in tackles. Yeah, Harris was fourth in the game with third with three solo tackles, fourth overall in total tackles. Wagner led the team in tackles. Luvu was second. Quan Martin, three. Will Harris, four. Yeah. And Daron Payne, by the way, did have two pass defenses in the game. I mentioned he got his paws on the one, and that was where he pressured Wilson and he knocked the ball, when Wilson threw it in the general area of a running back, and Payne almost had his paws on it, but he had another one that he tipped as well. All right, we will get to everything else that happened the first Sunday of the NFL season that we did not get to yesterday. We will do that next. Again, Joe Beninati at 12, not on the Caps, but on the Terps. He's called the first two Maryland games, and he has seen the freshman phenom Malik Washington in his first two games. So we'll talk to him. Doc Walker will join us at 12:30.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.